Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. Ivy EST. I am the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today, fold it up, dude, we are going to talk about the Rolling...
Not the Rolling Stones.
Okay.
Let's start. We're talking about a stone. They're just not rolling. They're temple. They're pilots in the temple. Okay. That was awesome. Sweet, man. All right. Here we go again. Yep. Try number two. The fucking Redux. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim. And today, we are going to talk about the debut album by the Stone Temple Pilots, Core.
STP.
Now, is that a normal or is that an Enormodome edition?
Single disc.
Huh, interesting. Yep. So, album...
From Walmart, but...
Interesting. So, a single disc, 53.39. So, All these people who make a 47-minute album, no offense, Queens of the Stone Age, just put it on a single goddamn disc. What is so hard about that?
What's so hard about it? I don't know, man.
Where does
sonically
it
act?
Oh, yeah. Tell me how it's just not as good.
Piece of Pie, Start Side 2.
Ooh, that's what I was hoping. That's a good one.
I mean, dude, it's pretty bad. Dude, you get 7 songs on side one.
Yeah, that's like, that's great, dude. That's how it should be.
Dead and Bloated through Creep. I think Creep is a great ending of side
I agree.
One. And then you get... And obviously, Where the River Goes is a longer song. That's a good song, huh? You know,
now, didn't they release like a Super Enormodome edition of this?
Yes, they did. And they did an excellent job of releasing it. And I have at least the listing in front of me. So you get everything remastered. Then you get some demos for Wicked Garden, Naked Sunday, Where the River Goes, Sex Type Thing, Dead and Bloated. Then you get a couple, you get a swing version of Sex Type Thing. You get the plush acoustic. There's a different version.
Is that from Unplugged?
It's actually from the Headbangers Ball. So most people,
really?
And we can talk about, let's wait till we get to the track and I'll talk about that. There's an acoustic version that's different, acoustic type version. And then there's the Headbangers Ball version.
Oh, okay.
But then, dude, then they have a live disc and it's essentially this whole album. Just live.
That's
it. Is like every song on this album plus Loungefly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then they have some, and then they basically have mostly the Unplugged show on it. So, now Grim, when this album came out, it actually came out to some mixed reviews, and a lot of people kind of thought that they were, I don't know if I would say a ripoff, but definitely that they just basically sounded like a lot of grunge acts of the time. And I think most notably, a lot of people said they sounded like Pearl Jam. I think Scott Weiland was criticized for sounding a lot like Eddie Vedder.
I've heard people just say it was almost like an amalgamation of Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if Pearl Jam released anything in 92. But
no, 90
Dirt. Yeah, that was when Dirt came out, I believe. There was actually a lot of good stuff that came out in 92, looking back.
Okay.
This one, I remember thinking at the time, man, this is awesome. Like, this is like what new rock is and all, you know, all that stuff. But it really doesn't necessarily stand the test of time for me. I think that they really found their stride with Purple. But this was the step to get there, and I get that. And there were a lot of big hits that were really popular. I remember learning how to play Plush on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very difficult song because, I mean, they use a lot of interesting chords, and they're not always that easy to finger, which I know that doesn't sound good.
Sounds.
So let's go into Sex Type Thing. No, but Yeah, it was definitely different, but it's funny because listening back to this album now, although it sounds very much like early 90s grunge, production-wise, I still feel like there's a lot of touches from 80s rock in terms of the album's production.
Yeah, which Brendan O'Brien,
who
has done pretty much all of their albums. He's also worked a ton on, Pearl Jam and stuff. I think he even did some stuff with the Chili Peppers. Because I think Brendan O'Brien, I thought
he was the engineer sort of learned Sugar Sex Magic.
Yeah, was that what it was? Because I know him and Ruben had worked together a little bit. And I don't know if you would want to call him his understudy at some point, but maybe that's it. I think one thing that STP sort of had going against them was they were a little bit, they were sort of late bloomers. This was their debut album, September 29th, 1992. A year prior, Pearl Jam 10 came out. Soundgarden's Bad Moto Finger had been out. Alice in Chains had put out a couple of albums. Nirvana had already come out with a couple of albums. So I feel like
they weren't first on the scene.
They weren't first on the scene. So people at this point, it was not sort of this new, fresh thing that people had heard. So I think, after a year, it's like, they're them coming out, it's like, they're just sounding like these people now, like that had already happened. So I think that did kind of work against him. And there are elements and times where I'm like, okay, I can hear some similarities and whatnot, but I don't know. To me, I just don't say that they ripped them off or were at least trying to sound like them. I don't agree with that. I don't think they were making
the vocal delivery is a little hard to argue with, especially in retrospect, because I don't know how to describe it, but it's almost like I don't hear it in their later work, his vocals as sounding contrived, but they kind of do in this album. And so I get the criticism. I loved this album when it came out. I have many fond memories of going to school on the bus, listening to this cassette tape in my Sony Sports Walkman, the yellow one, but,
The yellow.
Fuck yeah.
Definitely.
but it's funny because I was never in a rush to go like pick this up as an older person. Yeah. I was going to say gentleman, but
it's you're just person.
Yeah.
Well, I think one thing to me that makes, this album to me, it sounds like this time period, which I know might sound a little sort of silly to say, but I feel like it may not be as or maybe it is time. Maybe that does make it timeless. I don't really know. But it's certainly not as dynamic as, their later work.
Correct.
But what I think makes STB in my mind such a great band is, you see what they did here. Dude, the jump from this album to Purple is insane.
Yeah. And
the jump from Purple to Tiny Music is
better.
Is great, too.
Yeah. I know.
So that's what I've always really loved about STP. Here's the thing. You could make the argument that, okay, these guys were sort of like a ripoff band or wanting to sound like this, if their next couple of albums would have sounded just like this.
Correct. I absolutely agree with that. It was a stepping stone album. They had to get out there. And dude, they very much to me sound like what I would think of as an LA grunge band, which is where they came from, right? They don't have, for better or worse, and I don't know what I would say defines this, but they don't have what I would call like that Seattle kind of sound. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah. I had that in my notes too. That's one thing is, they started like in San Diego and played a lot of their shows in LA. But yeah, they're not Pacific Northwest. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, and there is definitely just a different sound.
Well, and it's weird. Sure. I wonder how much, because so Brendan O'Brien produced, I think, all of their good albums. I didn't look at Shangri-La Di Da, but he definitely did this through four.
Yes, he did.
And yeah. I mean, shit, dude, he did Rage Against the Machine, Mixed Super Unknown. So like his head is handed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I wonder, it had to be within the time that this came out between then and Purple, because there was a shift in the production. The production of those other records does not sound like this. It was like they hit a point in the early 90s when they were like, okay, we don't need like the big, like huge echo drum sound. We don't need to like do eight tracks of just the same guitar riff to just make it enormous. Thick. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, well, I think there's two things to that. One, if you look at just the material, the songs themselves that are on this album to also the songs that are on Purple, they made a creative leap
in just the types of
songs that they were writing. So I think it lent itself also to being able to do and use a little more, I don't know, creative production stuff.
I just wondered because, you know, it's like, it's not only did they make a creative leap, but like just overall music production seemed to have changed.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think some of these, and I think one thing too is you got to remember though, these bands, they started off, you know, a lot of these guys with their debut albums. We're not talking big budgets. We're not talking a lot of money. They hadn't, you know, made it yet. Right. So it's like, hey, we want to get these guys into the studio. They recorded this album in LA over 3 weeks. Let's just get them in. We don't have the time or the money to spend on
screwing around trying
different things. It's like, hey, let's just get a very good like baseline recording.
Yeah.
And
polish
and
just it have up it and
sound,
there you go.
Let's just make it sound really good and we'll put it out there. You know, and I think also with, you know, bands that maybe also hadn't recorded a lot, spent a lot of time in the studio, maybe they didn't exactly know what was possible and say, hey, I want my song to sound like this, or let's push it in this direction.
Yeah, you just want to get a good take of the song. It's something exactly you can put out there. Yeah, that's really fair. Now, the nerd in me, in listening to music from this era, I really hear it in the drum sound and the guitar sound. Okay. And one thing's particular is next time you listen to this album, listen to the way the kick drum sounds. There's almost more emphasis on the high end of the beater hitting the kick drum head than there is of the thump
the boom.
It's same thing with like Metallica and Justice for All as like that same sort of kick drum sound. Where it's
instead of the boom boom.
End attack of that beater hitting the skin, which is just interesting because at some point that changed and people didn't, that wasn't necessarily what people wanted to emphasize anymore.
Yeah. You know, man, I really feel like it's pretty awesome that, you know, Brendan O'Brien has worked with all these bands. I feel like people don't, I don't know what he's done and who he's kind of worked with lately. I don't know if he still works with Pearl Jam. Is he still doing Pearl Jam stuff?
The latest thing that he is credited for is The Offspring, Let the Bad Times Roll from 2021.
Did he do Smash? Did he do anything else by The Offspring? Because that would be pretty cool. You got to keep him separate.
Yeah, hey, Offspring.
It's time to relax. Splinter.
Hold on, we're getting
Americana.
Well, looks like he's done most of the Offspring stuff, but
no Smash yet.
I'm not finding Smash. Maybe Smash wasn't big enough, and they weren't able to
Smash Mouth. I mean, they were big enough.
But dude, he produced Neil Young's Mirrorball. Aerosmith. He mixed Aerosmith. Get a Grip.
Dude, I mean that's a fucking good album, man.
Both the big Rage albums. I don't know about the first one, but the later ones.
I mean, you know what would be really interesting is to put sort of his discography up against Rick Rubin's and just kind of do a little compare on who they've worked with and everything. Because man, him and Rick Rubin.
Oh, Rick Rubin, yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting just to kind of like compare who they've worked with, because I feel like people gravitate way more towards, at least I feel like Rick Rubin's a more of a, I guess I would say, a household name in sort of novice music fans. Like, people are going to probably know him before they know Brendan O'Brien, but I think their resumes, I think, are pretty much, you know, neck and neck.
Yeah, except he is O'Brien is much more in the rock arena, where Rick Rubin, I think, has just stuff a lot more all over the map. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway,
that's true.
Yeah.
Well, before we get, I guess, into the tracks, dude, so they came up with the name of the album Core, essentially just from the apple from Adam and Eve, the Adam and Eve story.
Yeah.
For the believers out there. Which I thought, I'm like, all right, cool. That makes sense.
They don't talk about this, but what do you think about the cover?
Yeah, the cover is, it's interesting. Dude, it kind of reminds me of, because it's like this, it's got this sphere.
Yeah, yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit of, what do you call it? Are You Experienced? Which is the American version of Are You Experienced? You know, how they're all like holding the ball out or whatever. It's funny, man. To me, it's
really
feels like
90s.
Like, if, dude, and even look at the back. Like, you see the back here?
Yeah.
Like, it's got, like, there's just, like, this kind of, like, naked body that's, like, hunched over.
Contorted.
It's like, okay. And just, yeah. It's just, it's awesome because it's just very 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, what gets me is, like, I think the font is terrible.
Oh, the font. Yes, I 100% agree with that.
And not even just the, like, font, but the way the whole thing's presented is just...
They're like, oh, we're going to squeeze Core, like, down the title. Or we're going to just, like, squeeze it down or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I would not nominate this for album cover of the year. But, dude, I love the other... Dude, their other covers are sweet.
Oh, man. Yeah, they're great. They're great.
Real badass.
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, okay. Maybe there's a story behind this, and if there is, we would love to know it.
Yeah, so tell us below.
Subscribe and comment below. Yeah,
maybe we're missing something. I don't know. All right, Grim, you want to get into the tracks here?
I think we can get into the tracks.
Okay, well, we're going to start with track number one, Dead and Bloated. You know, I think it's interesting. This is one of those tracks that it wasn't a single, but I've heard it on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's a couple tracks on here. And to me, I think that sort of.
I can't believe it wasn't a single, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's the sign of, I think, of a really good album. Is when there were three singles on this album, and there are songs on this album that were not singles that are played on the radio. And I think that's pretty cool. And this is definitely one of them. But sort of how this song came to be, Dean DeLeo, he was working at a guitar shop, and Scott Weiland was working across the street, and he would drive, I guess his job was to like drive models through their photo shoots. Doesn't sound like the worst job in the world, right?
Yeah.
And so while he'd be like sitting there, he would like, if he had an idea for a song, he would run over to the guitar shop and be like, oh, hey, Dean, like, and they'd kind of like mess around because, you know, Dean's working at a guitar shop and he can, you know, mess around with stuff. And so I guess Scott Weiland came over there and kind of like hummed this, you know, sort of the riff or his idea for this song. And that's kind of how it sort of initially got started.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Now, were they in the band at that point, or did they just know each other?
I don't know. So initially, before, it was Stone Temple Pilots, and I don't know if this was like the four, no pun intended, core members. There was they were called Mighty Joe Young as a band, and I don't know if they're playing a show or they were getting ready to record or something, but essentially, they got a call from a lawyer saying, "Yeah, there's already a band called that, and you can't." Take that name. So then they were always fans for some reason of the like STP Motor Oil in like the logo. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh, STP is cool. And they just came up with Stunt Double Pilots. So I don't know at what point they became like a band.
Okay.
But they were at least writing and doing stuff together at this time. But I had always wondered sort of what this song was about. And Scott Weiland just said it's not really about anything. He's like, it's more just stream of consciousness and words. He was like, yeah. He was like, I was 21 or 22 years old at the time. I didn't have a whole lot of like life experience to draw from. So
it's just something that sounded gritty and dark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, it's more about the vibe. And dude, it's actually kind of funny because the word, I'm good with it. Like the word, I think the words and stuff, they just, I don't know, things kind of fit together. And, you know, it sounds good to me, man. I'm like, I was just always curious. I'm like, man, if there is a story or something behind the please, song, I would tell. Like to know what it is, because it's not apparent on the face of it.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
So.
Song number deuce.
Sex type thing.
A lot of flack for this song because it seems, now of course Scott Weiland said that it was like sort of more of a commentary about macho, you know, abuse of power against women, sort of all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't come across like it comes across like it could have been a Limp Bizkit song or something. Like, yeah, lyrically, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. He did get a lot of flack for this because it seemed like he was. So essentially what happened was he wrote the lyrics after a girl he was dating was raped by three high school football players after a party. And so that's sort of where it came from. And he kind of claimed and has said that, hey, this is an anti-rape song. I think. Here's the issue that people have. It has a very the same issue Spinal Tap had with Smell the Glove. You know, the question is like, you know, she's the victim, right? And it's taking like this. If he was the victim, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. So, you know, there's a lot of similarities there, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I get all that, but it doesn't come across like you're. It comes across like you're one of the football players.
It does. I'll give you something that you won't forget. I said you shouldn't have worn that dress. Here I come. I come. I mean,
and it's not spelled the way you would think it is. But
yeah, well, Apple's also the one transcribing it.
Yeah, true. True. Yeah. Does it have a lyric sheet in the record?
That's a good question. I don't think it does. Nope, not that I see. But doesn't matter how you spell it. Anyways.
Yeah, I know. I know.
But anyways, you know, it was, people were pretty critical of it. You know, some people might even say, you know, was sexist, you know, and I would just have to say, you know, what's wrong with being sexy?
Yeah. Yeah.
So track number three,
Wicked Garden.
Garden.
Another single, right?
No, it wasn't. The three singles. Wow. Yeah, yeah. And see, that's what I was kind of saying. Like, dude, you hear this on the radio all the time.
Oh, yeah, and you did too then.
Yeah. It gained a lot of popularity, I think, from their Unplugged show, too. This is one of the ones they did on the Unplugged show and everything. You know, Scott Weiland basically said it's a song about people allowing their innocence and purity to be lost from their lives. And I really like a couple of lines really stand out. But one of the first ones is, you know, can you see like a child?
Yeah.
And I've always thought, you know, children have that, you know, that innocence. Right. And, you know, they kind of look at the world as curious, and they have sort of this unjaded perspective.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like a lot of people, you know, we lose that. I think as we get older, we go through certain life experiences. But you know, he says, you know, can I bring you back to life? Are you still alive?
Yeah, right?
And it's basically saying, hey, you know, you know, you kind of lost that innocence. Can you get it back?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, but I've always liked the song. I think it has some really good transitions, and I love the way he sings it on the Unplugged show. It's a fantastic job when they do it on the Unplugged show.
That was one of those, looking back to that era, some bands had like an Unplugged, like Nirvana's was pretty big. There's Alice in Chains.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's weird because you would see, I mean, obviously it was an MTV thing. So sometimes they would just play like, you know, the video, just like one song or whatever. And I know Pearl Jam did one. It's weird though. I don't remember seeing Pearl Jam's kind of pushed out and promoted as much as the other three, I guess I'll call them.
Yeah, sure.
STP, Nirvana, and Alice in Chains. I just wasn't as sort of familiar with that one. Then we go into track number four, Grim, No Memory.
I actually had no memory of this song. I like it. I think it's a great interlude. And I mean, you know, the DeLeo brothers have never been disappointing in terms of their compositions. I think those guys are just awesome. And I don't know. I think this works really well going between Wicked Garden and track number five, Sin.
Sin. Right. Well, and you know, the thing is, I almost think of them as they could be like one track because it is such an intro, right? I mean, it's like if No Memory and Sin were just put together.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, it would just be
the second longest song on the album.
You wouldn't think anything of it. So,
yeah.
But so here's the thing with Sin. I think this song really shows the musical direction that the band was going to head in their next couple of albums, because they have there's that nice transition towards the end of the song where it's pretty much heavy throughout the song. And then they really transition into this nice, cool acoustic part.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, still shackled to the shadow. Mm-hmm. And he sings that kind of whole part. And you kind of see the production and the light bulb goes on, and that becomes much more apparent in you know, Purple, and then again in Tiny Music. But when I listened to this recently again, I never really thought of that before, and I just really think this is kind of shows like the evolution, like where they're going to take things a little bit.
Yeah, agreed. So, track number six, Naked Sunday.
Naked Sunday. Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
As you would assume, is sort of his commentary on organized religion.
Yeah, that does sort of make sense. Sort of about, they think they said, you know, telling others what to do and what to believe.
Mm-hmm.
They switch off people's minds and control the masses.
Oof.
Yeah, just getting deep.
Yeah.
So one thing I noticed, and they're pretty open about sort of who their influences are, Led Zeppelin being one of them. I feel like this song really reminds me a lot of Achilles' Last Stand.
Oh yeah. Okay. All right.
There are some guitar parts, but also the song just really kind of drives straightforward.
And yeah, I feel
like
sure.
Achilles' Stand is, you know, has that. But then this is and dude, I just love it. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're all God's children, the giver of love. So he's, you know, he's got some fun lyrics, I think. I think he's still finding his way a little bit.
Yeah. Well, at that age, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, at that age. Then we go track number seven, Grim, the third single, Creep.
Third single.
Not to be confused with Radiohead's Creep.
Songs of the same name, and bro.
Songs of the same name. So if you guys haven't checked out that episode, we do a little Creep episode where we talk about Radiohead's Creep and STP's Creep. Which one do you guys like better? Which one? I mean, Radiohead's Creep kind of like made Radiohead at least sort of relevant. I mean, you could definitely make the argument if they don't have that song, like, where does that band go?
Yeah, so let us know below.
Like, subscribe,
which creep below. Do you choose? Is this creep bothering you?
Is this creep? Nah, it's just quite delightful, actually. So Scott Weiland said of this song, it's just the idea of, like, being a young person somewhere and caught in between, like, still being a kid and becoming, like, a young man.
Yeah.
Second guessing yourself.
Yeah.
And not feeling like you fit in. Now, there were two videos apparently that they shot for this this music video. The first one was shot by a director you might know, Grim. His name is Gus Van Sant,
who's
fair number of films. Elephant, yes, is one of them. Good Will Hunting, a lot of people know, and he's done some other good stuff too. But apparently, My Private Little Idaho. It was shelved due to its drug and sexual references.
Ooh, so, wow!
And again, Grim, all I got to say to that is, what's wrong with being sexy?
Yeah, come on, you
know? Dude. Wow. I do think it is a little funny though, sort of how the perception of like 80s music videos and how sort of sex or sexualization kind of changed and how it was more criticized in the 90s from how it was depicted. Like in the 80s, you'd have, you know, chicks all over these dudes.
And it was terrible.
And their spandex. And we all knew like what message they were kind of like sort of getting across. But then in the 90s, I think it turned a little, maybe the music was a little darker.
Yeah.
And it you know, the visual in the videos, maybe a little dirtier. And people, like, all of a sudden
lost their shit there.
Yeah, it was like, oh, we got to censor this. It's like, you know, people flipped out over, you know, Fiona Apple's Criminal and stuff. And
yeah,
I do find it sort of interesting that the way that, you know, maybe a little, I don't know, hypocritical, I guess.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Absolutely.
But what do you think? Are you a fan of this song? It's pretty much just straight acoustic.
Yeah, I've always liked the song. It's a nice change in the album. Honestly, it's just a good change.
Yeah, you're looking for something to throw at Wishes.
Yeah, I'd like to smash his fucking head in with a shovel because I digress.
Well, don't call PETA or. Dude, you're a fan of you know Free what? Animals Now, if, started if by Chelsea Gamble, daughter so of the much, illustrious Fisher
come
Gamble.
Come get this piece of shit and take him out of my life. I hate his ass. I've hated him from day one. And,
worse.
And of course, the motherfucker's still alive a decade later. All these great people die, but let's
nope, just
keep it going for this cat. I really wishes his ass would die.
Still wishing. Still wishing. Well, I think one thing in this song too that is sort of the lyrics I like is think you're kind of neat. Then she tells me I'm a creep.
Yeah.
It's sort of like this thing, and you could go for men or for women, but this is sort of told from, you know, his perspective.
Yeah, sure.
Where it's like you see someone who is all put together and they would go out and they want the attention and everyone to look at them, but they only want the attention from really the people that they want attention from.
Yeah. Right?
As soon as they start getting attention from someone where they don't really want it from, well, it's like, oh, get away from me, or you're a creep, or you're this.
Yeah,
or that.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It's sort of like this weird kind of psychology. And I think that's sort of like what he's kind of singing about in this song. But I've always really enjoyed this song. Came out with a promo sort of version.
Oh, really?
And the way he sings, and later in one of the verses, like he changes the melody. And it's the way, if you listen to also the way they would play it live or on the Unplugged show, when he sings think you're kind of neat, and then she tells me I'm a creep, friends don't mean a thing, guess I'll leave it up to me. He sings it at a much higher much higher pitch and everything. Oh, but on the studio cut, he stays very just kind of flat throughout. I like it when he raises it up. I think it really adds some richness to the song. I kind of wish that was in the album, to be honest with you.
Noted, bro.
All right, Grim. Now we're going to flip the vinyl. Track number 8, Piece of Pie. Now, you said this is one of your favorite songs, it sounds of the album. Yeah, dude. What about it does it for you there, Grim?
I just like just the way it works together. I really like I think the riff is just really kind of sticky. And
that sticky icky.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about it. It's just a good hard rock song. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Usher's song. Yeah.
No, definitely not. Or the Thong song.
Yeah. So it's staring. And I don't really know what it's about. Of course, they talk about a lot of the songs, what they're about. I don't really know what this is about, but
yeah, I didn't read anything specific.
It doesn't matter. It's just a good, just a solid riff, man.
Just wants his piece of pie.
Yeah.
All right, now we move on to track number 9, which is probably at least off this album. I mean, I guess you could still say it's their biggest song as well.
But yeah. That is Push. Yeah, again, like I was saying, one of the first ones I learned how to play on guitar. I could not play it now.
No. I was actually going to be like, oh, man, if he's going to pull out his guitar.
No, I did. It would take me a minute to get this thing back because it's been a long.
Interesting.
I haven't really played a lot of Plush these days. But yeah, it was. I just remember learning it. And as a kid, you're like, whoa, where did these guys come up with these chords? Like, this is not just your standard, like, G, C, and D.
Yeah. But this is one of the, I think this is, even though it wasn't the first single on the album.
It was the biggest one.
This is the one. Yeah. And you hear it on the radio every day. It's
it's really the good one song. I wanted to listen to over and over and over.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And it's yeah, it's a longer song too.
It's
5.5 minutes. So it goes. But I think a lot of people, this is one they definitely criticized him for sounding a lot like Eddie Vedder.
And the song itself, I think it could be more in line with like that Pearl Jam sort of stuff. Because some of the other ones are just really heavy, which Pearl Jam didn't get that heavy.
Yeah. This one's a rock song, but it's not like, you know, Piece of Pie.
Yeah. Right? And it's funny because for some reason, I don't know why, and having listened to this again, it just kind of popped up to me, but I always thought it was at the front of the album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. I don't know why, but...
I mean, they do take a while to get to it.
They do. You know? They do. Very much so. But, you know... Worth the wait.
It's a catchy riff. And yeah, it's one that you can kind of get it stuck in your head too. Da-na-na.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, the brothers are just really good at writing rock songs. I don't know.
They're awesome, man. Yeah. All right, Grim. Track number 10. Wet My Bed.
Now, I guess this was just Scott Weiland and I think it said either Robert or Dean.
Robert
DeLeo in the studio just messing around.
Yeah, it was an improv. This is the first thing they did for the album.
Yeah, which I think is really funny.
Dude, it would have been hilarious if Brendan O'Brien, I mean, I'm sure he had heard all the other songs, but if he hadn't heard anything and they're like, yeah, this is one we want to do first, you'd be like, oh man, is the rest of the album going to be like this? Yeah, this is going to be a long 3 weeks.
And I think that's Brendan O'Brien that you hear come in and say, now what? Yeah.
It's pretty cool, dude, man.
The lyrics are always have always been really weird. I like him, and it sounds like he's in the middle of like some sort of a heroin binge or something, the way he says everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if he was doing that then, but I'm sure he was well on his way.
Where's that cigarette?
Yeah, Yeah. Did you check the bathroom, the bathtub? She sleeps there sometimes. Water cleanses, you know. Washes dirt away, makes new.
Yeah.
We got a writer here.
But, dude, perfect again. Weird. It just acts as a weird interlude and such a perfect thing into Cracker Man.
Cracker Man. Dude, the energy of Cracker Man is just so good, dude.
Oh, yeah.
It's so badass.
Now, is that one that you'd hear also? I feel like you'd... Maybe on like alternative rock radio.
Yeah, it's. I certainly you wouldn't hear it as much as Dead and Bloated or Wicked Garden, which were not singles. No. But this one I think would get of the rest of the tracks on the album. This is kind of that next in order that you would hear. It's a crowd favorite. They would a lot of times open their shows with this song. Like when I saw them, I was able to see them once in Detroit, and this is what they started with.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They opened this, a lot of their shows with this song because he loved to do the, pull out the megaphone.
And he would
to change the vocals and everything, which is awesome, dude. It's sort of this like the call and response thing a little bit, you know, in the song and whatnot. So I really liked how he did that. It was a cool little thing.
Yeah. I don't know what the song's about.
I don't know either. I was going to say that, but I like the way it sounds.
It sounds like it could be about like a cross dresser, because it says he's a man, cracker man. He's a woman too.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
Roman. I'm a Roman, maybe trying to figure out who they are and who they want to be. But yeah, if anybody knows, let us know
below.
Subscribe and comment below.
Then Grim, we're going to wrap it up here with a very long song. And that is Where the River Goes.
Yeah, always like this one, dude. Especially when it gets into the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's that bit's chromatic and he kind of just kind of slides back down every time. And I like his guitar solo. It has kind of it's an Eastern thing.
Definitely an Eastern thing.
Far from.
I think it's cool that this is such a long song and it is kind of like where the river goes. Because, dude, it almost takes the sort of like symbolism of just a long winding river, and you're just kind going down the river with them. And one thing I like about it, and sort of they do something nice with this song that reminds me sort of Soundgarden, where they're able to play like real heavy, but it's not like this, but it doesn't have to be fast. Like it's sort of this drawn out heaviness. I think Soundgarden does that really well, and I think they do it well in this song too.
Now, not to if we would have been able to keep that format, this would have been it. Now it's slightly different, but there was on what's that band to where the river flows down.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
So pretty much songs are the same name.
Yep.
Close, but not really. Close, but no cigar.
Yes. I'd still pick this one.
I think I would too. All right, Grim.
Collective Soul. That's the band.
Collective Soul. Yes.
Yes, dude. Collective
Soul. We reached the point in the show where, one, we talk about our favorite track. Yours happens to be Piece of Pie.
Yep, we know that. So that's already. What's yours?
Dude, that's a good question, man.
I feel like you're really a no memory kind of a guy.
No memory. Yeah. It's a song that's had a lot of criticism. I really like Sex Type thing because of the energy, and I like Cracker Man a lot for the same reason.
Okay.
And then I like Creep because I just like the it would 100% be Creep if it was the other version where he changes his vocal melody. It would be 100%. I think another thing with a lot of these songs too that I really like, and I have a hard time disassociating with their Unplugged show, because they started the Unplugged show with Cracker Man, and the Unplugged version of Cracker Man is badass, dude. Like it's really, really good. Cracker Man, Wicked Garden, they did Plush, they did Creep, no, and then they also did an acoustic version of Andy Warhol.
Oh, I remember that one. Cool.
So
by David Bowie.
So I sort of got a three-way tie, I guess, you know. But I guess I have to scratch and scratch first. Is that correct,
Grim? I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. What should I scratch with? Should I do a cigarette?
Oh, yeah, dude. Just because of scratch wet my bed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you kept looking for it. You finally found it.
Yeah. So I think you're probably going to want to get the WTIFIFs here. Piece of Pie is actually going to be my scratch.
What?
What the fuck is that shit?
Yep. I think the one thing for me with this track, and again, I do like it. It's got the heaviness to it. There's just something like that. He has this twang in his voice, and it reminds me of like when he sings this back and forth. It reminds me of Layne Staley.
Well,
like when people were
one of the criticisms of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can I don't see know, that.
You know, and that's not even, I guess, my criticism of the song. I was just trying to think, gosh, what track? I mean, I have a hard time. I mean, I don't want to do Wet My Bed because it's just classic. I mean, I could have taken the easy way out and said No Memory, but I kind of consider No Memory and Sin. I'm just trying to think, you know, sure, you could make the argument for a lot of the popular songs, the classics, because radio plays them a lot. But it's just where I'm at. So what do you got, Grim? What do you got?
Sex Type Thing.
Oh, wow. Okay. Just because of its content
or musically? I hear you about the energy. It does have some energy. But yeah, it's very cliche of everything about that time that you could mock on alternative rock for.
Okay.
Not that I would, because I mean, I'd like it, but you could, you really could.
Yeah. I mean, I think sort of what the song's about, I don't know. I feel like
his statement was a, maybe it's true, but
it doesn't come across in the lyrics. If you're looking very literal at the lyrics, I mean, you know, I think people have a hard time. It seems like he is taking their viewpoint.
Correct.
You know,
absolutely.
And I can see why people, you know, it's like, well, if you're singing, well, about
then
this
watch
you're
the video his, too. The video is not exactly like, it's not exactly like him fending off these people who are, you know, he looks.
It's fair.
It's like, more where are you going to put that mic stand?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. All right. Well, I think that
pretty much wraps it up
the episode. Yeah. Well, everyone, thank you for listening. Let us know your favorite track and let us know what track on this album you guys would scratch off. It's a pretty great album. Do you guys feel the same way? Do you guys feel that, you know, this is sort of a, I don't know if I want to say a ripoff, but kind of like a heavily influenced album of some of the bands at the time. Let us know what you guys think.
How much of that was them and how much of it was what the record company felt like they needed to sound like too, is what I'm wondering.
That's a good point, man. Very good point. So on that note, it is time to go on the dude.
Scratch a Track is produced by The Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and The Tins. Copyright 2023, The Dude and Grim Show.